My name is Peter Salas. I'm going to be here to wake you up the next four mornings because I'm going to be introducing our plenary speakers. You know, last year over July 4th weekend, I was really proud to be a guest at Elliot Lear's wedding, and why in the world he'd want to spend the days before his first anniversary here at USENIX is totally beyond me. But I run into Elliot at USENIX meetings, at IETF, and at NANOG meetings. He's one of the authors of RFC 1627 a whole decade ago, of 1918 more recently, and most recently of 3617 last autumn. He was SGI's internet architect for years, and he's been the consulting engineer at Cisco since early 1998. I know he's got a lot to tell us, and so I don't want to occupy a lot of time in empty introductions, and so here's Elliot.
Yep. Good morning. Thank you for that introduction, Peter. For those of you who don't keep track of RFC numbers, that last one, 3617, is I think the title is something like TFTP Applicability and URI, but I really wanted to call it TFTP Considered Harmful. They wouldn't let me. So I'm going to talk today about how do I manage all this? All what? You know, all this network management stuff. We have grown our networks in size and scale dramatically in the last 10 years, and many of the mechanisms that we are using are, from the 10 to 15 year period. And so I want to talk a little bit about some of the problems that I'm facing. And the reason I wanted to talk about it with this group is because pretty much every single person sitting in front of me is smarter than me and might actually help me solve some of these problems. So why is all this stuff important? Is it just money? A couple of people have said to me, because I asked this one, why is network management important? Why do I bother, even monitoring one particular object on one particular element? And my service provider's friends will all say, well, that's money in the bank for us. Anytime I monitor an object, it's because there's money involved. And in fact, one of them went on to say precisely how much money per object that it both cost and how much it gained him. He was able to quantify at that level, which amazed me. But that's when I also learned that service providers and big telcos are the best data warehouses I've ever seen. But it's not just money now, because as the networks have grown in scale and scope, they've also taken on all new responsibilities, including use in our healthcare systems. If you want to actually understand where your prescription is, you might need to use the internet if you're using internet prescriptions. At some level, just as it began, we've come full circle in one way, which is that our defense systems, at least the non-critical ones, make use of TCP/IP. I don't know about the critical ones. I've never been in that part of the world. But I can tell you that we've had a lot of challenging questions from within Cisco, from the Department of Defense. So that leads me to believe that there at least is some reliance on it there. And so the question then is, well, great, that's the functions. What about the management? Well, you don't know that you have actually the functions working if you don't have the management. So, in the TCP/IP parlance, which is, I'm a child of TCP/IP, really what we had in 1987 was the first attempt to even just monitor informations with what I would say is grand delusions of being able to actually configure network elements using SNMP. And as it turns out, a couple of companies were able to meet that requirement, but not many. But they were able, and many people were able to, and do even to this day, collect very useful statistics, measure performance of non-critical systems. But that's a much smaller part of the requirement that we see within network management. Today we see a need for full customer-facing provisioning, because any enterprise is looking to reduce staff. Literally, that's one of the reasons, and they'd rather have everything done on the web. Phone conversations cost money. I've had customers come up to me and say, you know, if this feature isn't managed properly, I get 7 phone calls and that costs me this amount of money. So we need, what they tell me, much better web interfaces to provisioning interfaces, to accounting interfaces, to customer service interfaces. These are the things that customers are asking for. And what they're also looking for at the enterprise level is a way to predict performance, a way to show some level of predictability in terms of how much capacity they will need in the future. And this is particularly true for both the front, the top of the line expenditures, that which brings in revenue, and the bottom, as well as below the line expenditures, including things like their voice systems, which they now operate on their enterprise networks, or if they don't, they will soon. So this is a, I guess, the accepted view within the industry as to how life is within network management. And it is that within fault and performance areas of the traditional, if you will, TMN model or FCAPS model, most network systems do a pretty good job on telling you that they have a problem. And they're able to also tell you about their performance. This is the accepted view. Within the accounting space, things are not quite as perfect. There is still a lot of development going on. Even as I speak, the final versions of the latest accounting records for the internet, IPFIX, which is the effort that's going on within the IETF, are still being finalized. And the volume of this data is something that has always proven to be a challenge. Configuration is an area, however, where I think everybody is in pretty good agreement that we've never really been able to standardize in a good way. We just haven't gotten there. I'll talk a little bit more towards the end of the talk about why I think this is, and then I'll ask, you know, am I wrong? And I'd love to hear your comments because now, having worked at Cisco for 6 years, almost, I won't say exclusively on this problem, I'm beginning to wonder if I'm taking the right approach. So, what's changed lately? Obviously, over the last 3 years, there's been much more of a focus on security demands. The sheer volume of network elements has just multiplied dramatically, and networks are definitely getting more complex. It's not just voice and VPNs, as I list there, but multiple elements of multiple applications, peer-to-peer networks, multiple VPNs, especially if you're a contractor, and in this world there are a lot of them these days that rely on themselves. And we definitely rely on these networks for more services. I have people come up to me and say, hey, Elliot, when can the power company run a TCP/IP network to my non-critical systems in California so I can save money? And I say, well, I guess it should be when the TCP/IP network is reliable enough so that it doesn't shut down their power in an unintended way. So I'm trumping up a definition of management. It's my definition. It may be the definition in the dictionary. I don't know. But these are the things that seem important to my customers. To know and to control. My customers largely would love to be able to take an academic pursuit and study, evaluate, and gain insight at all different levels, but most of them don't have the time and they got way too much data and they're not able to bill for it as it is. Knowing is, for me, two things. It's a discovery, discovering what you know, and that includes inventory of what you have and where it is, and what state it's in. Nominally, it also includes how much it's using, too. And of course, we've always had discovery mechanisms. It used to be some human walking around the machine room saying, oh, there's a router, there's a hub, a couple of printers. Well, the printers were easy. And the reason that it was easy to actually do discovery was because each of these devices cost tens of thousands of dollars in the past. Today, and it's been this way for some time, employees can plug a device into the network and just let things run. And, it may be months, if ever, that companies discover this. The other things that need to be discovered, though, these days are phones, SIP servers, NATs, and firewalls. All sorts of wireless access points, they're a big problem in terms of discovery. And just normal hosts. When I talk about network management, I have a sort of inclusive view that the network includes the hosts. A lot of the times, especially in the industry, people split system and network management. And I think from a customer perspective, they can't afford to do that, at least not for very much longer. They can specialize, but they have to view the network as one thing. The problem that we've had, I think, even within Usenix and within the industry is that people have had a very ambivalent view of discovery. Just like everything else, anything that touches security and discovery does, people say, well, if you can keep people from discovering your network, then they can't attack it. The problem is that there are so many mechanisms out there to discover your network that it's almost impossible. I mentioned a couple of mechanisms here that are used. And I mention this because a lot of people's first advice, at least for Cisco, is, just turn off that CDP and your network won't be discoverable. Well, that's not really true. Look at all the mechanisms there. Let me ask a question. How many people, if it ever comes out, would want to use DNSSEC? Anybody? Okay. I'd say about 20% of the room, maybe a little less. Turns out DNSSEC is the latest discovery mechanism. Why? Because there are records that sit between every A record, between every authentication record, that indicate who the next record is. So you can just walk those next records to determine all the records within a zone. You can still hide things if they don't have DNS records, but that causes other problems too. There are two mechanisms that we see, which is things that actually tell you that they're out there without being prompted, the active hellos, and passive responses, things that need to be queried. And then there are different levels of discovery, layer 2 and layer 3. And people, I think, sometimes also view that these have equal security properties. And that, I think, is a fallacy. So what they do is, a lot of the times, they cripple themselves at the layer 2 level, leave all these layer 3 mechanisms open, and then they can't find all the devices that they need to manage. So the hackers love it, and they really love it when the network managers don't do it, and they really love it when the network managers try to hide it. Because as Lumetta has demonstrated, a network is eminently discoverable. Bill Cheswick has produced beautiful maps demonstrating this, and as have people like Casey, Kim Claffey, and Lanner. Oh, yeah, thank you. You knew that, Peter. The other problem with discovery is that as people tend to do discovery these days, it really only works for a small number of devices. When I say small number of devices, I'm thinking thousands in the 10 to the 3 order. Large number of devices, particularly at the service provider, you cannot discover. You cannot go looking for a million devices. You'll assuredly find them, but you can't really keep track of them, and you don't really want to check to see if they're still there. This is not what the service providers need. They need to be told when a device is on a network. These mechanisms are called call-home mechanisms, and they exist at both the network level and at the application level. An example of a call-home mechanism is when Netscape tries to go upgrade itself, or an application tries to go upgrade itself. It's checking back with its home network, saying, do you have anything new for me? Apple does a particularly good job of this with their software updates, I would add. The standards in the network community, however, don't really take into account call home, except with DOCSIS, which has done some amount of this, and PPP over X, where X could be Ethernet or ATM. And there are several proprietary standards. And one of the things that I'd like you to take away from this talk is that we are swimming in standards. We have any number of organizations that attempt to standardize these things. And the vendors get confused and implement one or two between them, maybe even more if they're a large company like Cisco, and you end up with interoperability problems. The number of standards organizations is a problem in itself. So having said all that, we do need one standard to do some sort of call home function, and this function should be able to provide a discovery component to it, and it needs to be able to handle at least 10 to the 6th customers, maybe 10 to the 7th or 10 to the 8th. Or I should say, that should be the number of devices, not customers. So the reason that we need it, amongst other things, and I picked this address out of a hat, actually out of my alma mater's hat, is simply that you do want to manage these elements, but there are all sorts of things that have cropped up in the way. And the first thing that has cropped up and has been there for a long time is a NAT. I'm not going to go on a NAT rant. There are a lot of people who do. They exist, and they exist for reasons that NAT could just as well be a firewall. The same problem continues to exist. The most common form of that is something akin to a Linksys or Netgear box today. And you say, well, that's the consumer. They don't really need their network managed, but they will. The problem we have with that address, and suppose that some service provider wants to monkey with that device on the left-hand side, they can't just go contact that device. There's just no way. Even if the NAT weren't there, the device may be down. It may be down simply because the customer powered it off. Or it may be down for other reasons. But they can't even go to look at that without the customer calling. Once the device does contact it, though, we have another little standards problem, which is we don't know what to call the device on the left. If we call it 192.168.1.2, well then, we have a little problem, which is that everybody's using it. If we call it voice.foo.com or whatever its domain is, we have another problem, which is that the service provider infrastructure today is not set up to handle individuals with domains. It does very well handling individuals within a single domain, and that's why you have 2995 DSL, but today they don't have the mechanisms in place to do that with DNS in terms of everybody having their own domain. And if they did, it would cost you two or three times as much, at least for some time. But that's not the end of it, because not only do we not know what to call the device on the left, but oftentimes we don't know how to tell it where to get information as to who to call on the right. Today, the best we can do is have somebody type that information in on a console. There's probably a need for a standard somewhere there as to how that happens, even if it's a user interface standard. So having told you already that there are too many standards body, I'm now telling you that there aren't enough standards. So supposing then that a device could call home, just precisely who should it call? And I call this problem nirvana or nightmare. Suppose, and the reason is that each of these entities have an interest in that device. The ISP has an interest in that device because it needs to configure upstream network connectivity. A voice provider, if that device is providing a voice function, is interested in configuring the voice parameters. And of course, enterprises that use VPNs want to configure security parameters to provide the appropriate policies. And of course, there's one more person that has an interest in configuring that device, and it's the customer themselves. I almost forgot about them. I'm going to put aside discovery for the moment. I'll come back to that last diagram because there's more to it. I want to talk a little bit more about fault and performance and accounting. It used to be, I think, 10, 15 years ago that when we thought about fault performance and accounting, we thought about people digging up parts of the street and all of a sudden part of the internet going away. It's a classic problem, and Sean Donnellan has done an excellent job in demonstrating just how hard it is to keep track of every last fiber that people can dig up, and it seems that every last one of them has been dug up at some point. But that's not really the problem today. We have seen some steady improvement. The nice thing is that I think even if you buy an off-the-shelf consumer device, it probably has a fair amount of management built into it. It's probably got an SNMP agent that's sitting there somewhere. Even the $100 devices these days can run something like that. And the standards in this area really have matured. SNMP version 3 is even making its appearance in the field finally. so that you can actually have some semblance of security. Syslog has been there since before practically a network has been there. It is evolving slowly itself through the use of reliable transport and maybe even some amount of signed messaging. This is all good stuff, no complaints there. We can really produce, you know, lots and lots of traps, lots and lots of syslog messages, and perhaps too much so, and I'll come back to that point. We have a lot of tools out there. I don't know if anybody's Googled lately for network management tools, but there are as many or maybe quite a bit more than the number of system management tools than we have for Unix. And there's the reason there is that there's a fair amount of more money being spent because these are many much more customized tools. And then we also, I think, have finally, we're beginning to get a handle on fault correlation. Or so I thought. This is just an old email error message. Actually, it's a new email error message that I got. There's only one problem with this message. I'm sort of pointing it out, right? Somebody decided that saying user unknown was too much text. Okay, fault management starts with the user notice. Maybe the user noticing there is a problem, but it starts with one individual being able to determine what the problem is. Now, if you look in that red status 5.1.1, there's actually an RFC that documents that is, in fact, user unknown. Now, I can tell you that my dad has never read an RFC. I don't even think he knows what it stands for. So if he gets a message like this, he really doesn't know what to do with it. And I don't want to point fingers or anything, but, you know, one step forward, one step back. I mean, the sentiment is in the right place in as much as they're able to provide a programmatic error code. And that's really good in as much as a program's going to parse the message. Unfortunately, it's not programs that parse these sorts of messages today. And maybe it would be that, you know, a particular vendor user interface would go and parse it. But nevertheless, how do you know that's who's going to be using yours unless you're a big optimist? Unix fault management, and I've made up these calls, so please don't hammer me on the internals of the kernel. I really have never poked into it all that much. I've been more of a network management applications person. But, you know, you start down at the bottom, and, you know, there's some failure of a disk or something like that, and you get a phys.io error of some variety in the kernel, and maybe, you know, that's down at the physical level, and then you get something at the, you know, the logical level, you get an error message, and, you know, then at the library level, you've gotten a write error of some form that indicates that there's a physical problem, and all of this is happening nice and serially. And it's great. And then, you know, at the application level, you're able to just do a printf somewhere, or maybe even to standard out, that to indicate, you know what, we got a problem. And then the message that actually gets printed out, you know, at NetHack is, you know. So, you know, and it's maybe a little bit more complex with when you have the layering that goes on with the GNU libraries linked to X, providing, you know, with a user interface attached or some sort of user manager, window manager. But we have a problem in spades on the network. The way networks operate and the way IP operates is that the layering is strict and there's a lot of multiplexing that goes on. So trying to tag an error to a particular application is sometimes fleeting at best. The fault correlation systems that have been developed over the past 5 to 6 years for TCP/IP, however, do a reasonable job of at least indicating that faults are related. There are a bunch of vendors out there that do work here. But nevertheless, the volume of messages that get generated to indicate perhaps even as much as one failed device can really test the strength of some of these systems. So this is the beginning of what I'll say is too much data or too much information. The nice thing, though, is that my customers and I think a lot of people have begun to realize that not only can they not look at every message from every machine, but they can't just look at the display out of the fault correlation system and wait for something to go red. Workflow management is becoming a bigger and bigger aspect of these networks in terms of automatically dispatching someone before the customer ever realizes that there's a problem, and that's great. So it avoids what I call fishbowl mentality, where you have some knock and some guy watching, just looking for red, and I think that's a great thing. But from an end customer perspective, we still have a bunch of challenges. For one thing, if you look at the two routers on the right and the left, and you have some path between them that either goes through ISP A to B to C or just ISP A to C, if there's a failure, it's very difficult to track, and especially if it's impacting performance between these two locations, it's very difficult to track from a customer perspective. Trying to even get ISPs to admit that they had a problem oftentimes is difficult. And trying to look at the BGP looking glasses to try and spot where those problems are is a very skilled task that requires lots of effort. Most of the customers at the enterprise level don't have those skills. And it's not just faults anymore that we have to worry about. One of the initial mistakes, I think, that was made in network management is that there was a separation between fault management and security management. Really what we have to look at is anomaly management. And we can't say for sure that every anomaly is security related. It's not. But rather, there are a class of anomalies which are, and chief amongst them are things like break-ins and DDoS. As of late, spam and phishing, I think, are the biggest security problems that we have. I don't know if Barry Shun is here, but I've listened to him on email and in the newspapers actually point out this, and I wish more people would, that spam is really as much a security problem as anything else. And phishing is probably the number one problem that the financial industry is scared to death about today. And the tools out there to manage them are very, very limited. I'm going to come back to that towards the end of the talk. So IDS has to take on a new role. The service providers realize that if you can spot the problem early enough and keep it off of your network, you're saving your, not only you're saving your internal network, but you're saving your revenue stream because all that bandwidth that gets sopped up by customers who have zombies that aren't really using it really could be spent elsewhere, and that's overhead that they don't want to spend. So they need intrusion detection mechanisms that don't just detect but actually cause a configuration change to prevent the DDoS attack as it's, or to stop the DDoS attack. So the truism here is if it touches your network, you're spending money, and the more it touches your network, the more money you're spending. This is one of the biggest problems for service providers today. But what's needed to support that? Well, you have to have some interfaces. It's somewhere along the way. You need to have IDS tell the configuration system, and the configuration system will tell the audit system, because large service providers won't make changes without audit streams at this point. And they shouldn't, because how can they tell that an authorized user actually made a change? But how does the system behave in a virus? This is an interesting question. So if you rapidly respond to an attack, and you nab it as the first customer actually has been able to, has been attacked, then maybe you nip it in the bud. But if the virus is just a little faster than you are, and you have automated processes that try and go in and shut down whatever it is that's attacking, all of a sudden you may have a little problem, which is that you've just shut down your entire network. So this has to be done in a smart way. And the tools to do this are very immature. And people have been working on it for at least 5 years. This area in particular needs a lot of work, and I'm going to come back to that. Right now we have a whole lot of proprietary ways to configure devices. And we don't, in fact, we have so many ways that we really don't have one good way. And the reason that this is important, again, that device there, if that's the customer's Linksys device, the service provider wants to be able to say, you're attacking the network, I need for you to turn to redirect your traffic or to otherwise go get an update to the virus system that you're using, the antivirus system that you're using, so you can clean up your system. One customer of mine said that if he can spot the problem, it's then 7 customer calls once the customer is told in some electronic way that they have a problem. That's a lot of money. And getting the virus updates while the customer is infected is, of course, a big deal. And the other problem is once the customer has cleaned up their network, how does the other end know? And that's a big deal. And this is an area, I think, for a lot of research. So a lot of questions here, not a whole lot of answers. But there will be. And then on the performance side of all of this, I used to use this slide all the time. I put it up here because it is still true that a fault problem can masquerade as a performance problem, and any substantial fault problem will cause performance problems eventually. And similarly, a performance problem can masquerade as a fault problem. But that's not really why I put it up today. Everybody has to have a war story in these talks, and I'm borrowing one of my friend's war stories. And what happened to him was interesting. He got called in by a big company saying, you know, we're not able to push our data from the United States to Europe. And I can't understand why. So he goes and looks, and he sees that they're using an SSL transmission of the data, and that the SSL is not handshaking properly. And it only doesn't handshake properly on the primary terrestrial link. It handshakes just fine if they go to their backup satellite link. Thinking, So he goes and he looks and he says, he does a trace route. And he says, well, you know, what's the path of this fiber that you're using? Well, let's see here. It goes, you know, across the Atlantic. It makes a stop in one of the islands about 1,000 miles off the European coast. And then it doesn't actually go through a router there, but it just, you know, it's patched through, and it goes off to London. And so he does the trace route, and he says, you know, the times here belie the laws of physics. Are you sure you're not making a stop in the Azores, which is the place where he was? And as it turns out, he was, but he didn't know it. So what this says is, you know, a violation of the law of physics is a clear sign of an anomaly. But who's going to test for this? And you know, none of the systems out there I've ever seen look for it, you know, a latency number to be too low. And would you really think about it? But it's one of those problems that eventually, if enough people do man-in-the-middle attacks, you'd expect to see the intrusion detection systems start to profile in this direction. The other problem that we have today is in accounting. Now, I'm not going to talk about NetFlow records. I'm not going to talk about any other form of accounting web logs. I'm just going to talk about monitoring two variables. There's two variables, and I'll tell you what those two variables are. We'll look at input and output on a queue. And when I say a queue, that really means something like the end of a DSL connection. One of the things that the service providers would like to be able to do is to at least know the traffic that's going, the aggregate traffic that's going through any particular site. The problem they have is that that volume adds up really quickly. This is a logarithmic scale, as you can see. And on a device, and this is at the device level, just monitoring two variables, you are here. And so the data requirement for that is a megabit. A megabit of what? Well, or I should say a megabit per what? Well, if we look at, was it a megabit or gigabit? It's megabit there. If we look at moving that over time, I can now tell you that soon 10,000 devices, if 10,000 is today, 100,000 isn't all that far off, and a million might not be all that far off either. And so the data requirement for just retrieving two variables becomes substantial. Now, there are a couple of ways to deal with this. One way to deal with it, and the mathematicians will know better than me, is to not look at the raw, you know, interface counters, not to try and store any of that information, but to start by looking at the first derivative of those, of that information. I think we're already doing that. We look at rates. So the next question is, can you look at the second derivative and just look at change and then just send updates when there's a change of rate? And that's one way to deal with this problem. And sometimes you can do that and sometimes you can't. You certainly can't do it if your increments of change are too small, because TCP/IP traffic can be very variable in the in the micro, and so you would be sending out more updates than you would from your second derivative change than you would from your first because of the timing, if they were triggered updates. The other way that you could deal with the problem, potentially, is to add some intelligence into the router or into the network elements to say, hey, collect this information and aggregate it for me. Now, Cisco and all the other network vendors have not done this really in the past because we figured, well, we're the network elements. We don't do that. We don't do aggregation. But maybe if the volume of data that has to head towards network management station is so great, it may actually make sense to put some amount of aggregation capability in the network elements. I can't say what amount of capability that should be. I actually leave that as an open question to the audience. I don't know. But I've now seen several research proposals that say, you know, give us a little bit of ability to do computing, and we'll be able to help you on this problem. And I'm very interested in those areas. I'm going to move on to configuration management, but you'll notice that there's a picture of a BMW steering wheel here. So I've been looking at cars a little bit. I've just moved to Europe, and I had to get a new car, and the new car that they gave me just happened to be a BMW. And it has these soft switches on the right of the steering wheel, and if you know, it also has a lack of a lot of gauges. It just has those two gauges in terms of the analog. There's actually two more underneath, but it's like, you know, gas and fuel consumption. But what I started out with was this little thing, which is a Daewoo Matisse. And it's actually a great little car to get around Europe. But it had all sorts of gauges. The nice thing about these cars, of course, is that you know, they have a whole lot of common features. You know, they both have steering wheels and clutches and four doors, mirrors, ignition keys. They even have transmissions. You know, it's great. And if you can drive one, you can drive the other, which is the important part. I was able to get out of my Daewoo Matisse and actually drive the BMW. And you say, well, so what? There were also a bunch of differentiators. Those differentiators were, you know, this neat automatic windshield wiper. I'd love to figure out how they do that, that detects the amount of rain on the BMW. And an information management system. Turns out if you go back to this thing, the neatest thing about this is that the BMWs are doing what the high-end routers need to be doing, which is that they're hiding as much data as they possibly can, whereas the Daewoo Matisse hasn't quite figured that one out yet. The nice thing and the reason that I was able to drive those cars, though, is that cars are 100-year-old, 110-year-old technology, and they didn't start out very common. And unfortunately, I think that's where we still are with IP. We have a lot of maturing to do. Customers are demanding a lot of new features, and when they're done demanding with a lot of new features, they ask for more new features. And even if they don't demand those new features, people are looking for a way to differentiate themselves. And so they add new features that the customers don't demand in many cases. And there was a paper that Peter was telling me about in which there was a lot of interesting yet useless technology that was developed even before IP routing has come into the play. And certainly the Industrial Revolution demonstrated that. And a lot of technology fell by the wayside. But people are still finding their ways here. What this means, though, is that we're spending a whole lot of time developing the features and not quite as much time being able to standardize those feature sets. And certainly the management of those feature sets has always been the last to come. And it's unfortunate, right? Because when do you need that management information in terms of when is it really useful? The answer is when you're first deploying, because you don't really know how the feature is going to behave. And, of course, management is the last thing to be added. So this is a challenge. It's a challenge in terms of customers being able to deploy new features. But technologies do deploy. We do have a lot of new features that are coming. I, by the way, solicit your help and your comments on how we can, in fact, improve the standardization process. I guess if there's one takeaway, it is that. Unix has had over 30 years to mature, by the way, and at the configuration management level, even Unix hasn't done a great job of it, in my opinion. POSIX works great as long as you stay away from the hardware. You have things like /proc, which I think help. But in terms of provisioning, as we'll see, it's not perfect. IP management is even further behind in some ways. But this is not entirely bad, and the reason it's not entirely bad is because we are still developing new and useful information. So, from a configuration component standpoint, you know, how do we add users? In Unix, you have the shadow password, you have Kerberos, you have LDAP, you have YP, you have all these different mechanisms by which you can add. And here I think people have recognized that, you know, you need to have something, and enterprises and universities drove all sorts of methods to be able to add users. Even for standard tasks, you know, cron and AT do a fine job. And at the application component level, you know, here it's far less standardized. If you look at SendMail, Eric Allman has redone SendMail CF, and even that, which is a very mature piece of code at this point, has seen a lot of churn. But the reason that it's seen churn is because he's added a lot of new features and he's restructured quite a bit. User configuration, we haven't even really begun to try and standardize, though .logins will work for years. It's all those other applications that don't. And at device configuration, as I said, I think we have quite a bit more challenge even in the Unix area. Now, the problem we have with IP and with networking is that we're much closer to the hardware much more often. And so that same area dogs us quite a bit. So we are able to standardize some things. You know, IP addresses, subnet masks, which hopefully go away, by the way, with perhaps in some variety with IP version 6, assuming we ever get there. Basic routing parameters, and I mean very basic routing parameters. But that's about it. It's very much like the BMW versus the Matisse, only there's even less commonality today. And we're trying very hard. I think a lot of us are trying very hard to fix this, but we're swimming uphill against new features still. The standards here also, though, are somewhat out of date, as I mentioned earlier. There are network elements that use TL1. All the optical gear does that, and they actually do a better job, perhaps, than IP even today in terms of being able to configure the network elements. Those standards are somewhat more mature. But now there's this new thing that everybody wants, as I say, to view the network as, you know, one big thing, hosts and network elements combined. So one of the questions that half the community is asking, well, why don't you borrow some of the system management tools that we're using? And so we see a lot of push for SOAP, XML, and WSDL today. Sorry. But XML is an interesting problem for us because really it's just angle brackets. It doesn't provide the common models that we need. As we've learned, a common schema is hard. How do we know this? We've tried and tried and tried. So we may need to try harder, but we may need ways to and methods that help us standardize faster. And this is an area I think that is ripe for research. So there is some good news on the horizon, at least. We know how to transport this stuff. At least we think we now know how to transport this stuff. And I'll have you know, my friends, it is not HTTP. And the reason it's not HTTP is because of that call home issue. And because the semantics of HTTP are not very happy in terms of doing things like session level locking. There is no real session level locking mechanism in HTTP. And network management, things that you rely on to keep your network connected, really want a locking semantic. So we've started some work on this protocol called NetConf, and it's somewhat cooked. And of course, we could not even agree on whether or not we could use one transport, so we'll have multiple transports. Again, the nice thing about standards is that there are so many of them. And why is this? It's because the user communities are very different. One of the things I think that we vendors and I think the standards body could use is a good, healthy dose of people with common sense saying, can't you just do things one way? But and maybe this community would be right for helping us on that. NetConf will start with a data model that is agnostic because, in fact, it will support any data model because we couldn't standardize that yet. There's a lot of work to be done there again. But it does provide for numerous operating device models, and this, I think, is a good thing. There will never be one operating model. A a Linksys device is not going to work the same way as a big Juniper M40 or a big GSR. It's just not. And the device that we just announced, the CRS, is a small supercomputer, and you wouldn't want to manage it like a Linksys. So there is some more work to be done in NetConf. The security aspects of NetConf are things that we still find challenging. People are questioning what level of authorization needs to be in the protocol before it goes out the door. So I ask for your help, and hopefully maybe you might want to participate in help answering some of these tough questions that we face. But I told you at the beginning of this talk that we'd looked at configuration, accounting, and fault performance. What's a home run? I just have to make an aside, by the way, that since we're in Boston, I only felt it appropriate to use a baseball analogy, and with the hopes that maybe Boston will someday win a World Series. And I do mean that. What is a home run? And to me, a home run is identity management. In as much as we're just getting our feet wet with configuration management, identity management provides just as much of a challenge, or more so, but not from the enterprise level. We know how to set up Windows domains. We know how to set up YP domains. We know how to run AAA servers, and that's all fine. But consumers, on the other hand, are truly feeling the pain. I went to put my Usenix badge on today, and let's see here. I have at least two different badges there, plus the key to my car, all tangled up simply because we have a whole lot of access methods to get from here to there, and consumers just have more of them. We have multiple passwords. There's a whole little industry on just doing password management at the consumer level. There's identity theft and phishing that goes on, and there's a lot of loss of privacy and many concerns about privacy just relating to identity. And my latest experience in terms of companies trying to manage all of these problems was getting a new bank account and trying to do internet banking in Europe. And what was necessary to do it, they sent me a smart card, that's the thing on the left, plus what they call a calculator, which is really a one-time pad that needs to have that smart card stuck into it. Then they sent me separately a contract number. Added to that, I then have to use a challenge and response to actually input that. And then there's a PIN to activate the one-time pad. So this is just my bank. Now, we have a lot more sensitive information on the network other than just our financials. There's also our health records. There are all different manner of relationships that we may want to keep private, and we may have multiple financial accounts. In my opinion, we have not done a very good job of managing this problem. The consumer has gotten the short end of the stick here, and it's ripe for help. And many people have tried. The problem is, when you start to say, yeah, there's a problem here, everybody jumps up and says, I'll fix it, and I'll be the only one. And so obviously, a major OS vendor tried to come out with a mechanism where they became the identity management and particularly the financial management system. Large phone manufacturers want to be able to use their technology to manage identities. And they wouldn't do a bad job of it, only they've just demonstrated that they too are vulnerable to attack. There is this small industry that we have today that handles password protection, these little calculators that keep all your passwords, or these PDAs, or these little encryption programs that people use. And of course, international credit card companies are very interested in this problem, but each of them wants to be king of the mountain. My argument is that the customer needs to be the king of the mountain, and that the individual needs to manage their own identities. But there are things that can be done to help. We need better standards, I think, again, for the user password interface. If we go back to all those calculators and all that junk that I needed just to access my bank account, wouldn't it be nice if we had much more standard smart card interfaces that allowed the user to be able to have multiple identities without having to carry all sorts of junk with them, maybe just one key, and yet not have to be concerned about anybody manipulating their other identities that they don't have access to. I think there's a lot of room for growth there. And so maybe some work on the in terms of providing some standard UI and some standard operating system interfaces that protect both the user's smart card and also make sure that only that information that is meant to go goes. I don't claim to be the expert on this. Maybe Bruce does. I hear he's talking, so I'm not going to be able to make it, but I wish I could because he's a smart guy. So I also think that if we solve identity management, we can solve the spam problem. And I also know that this is a really big problem. It amazes me that one of the top five applications on the internet, email, is the most unmanaged application these days. And it's becoming more and more unusable. If there's one area that needs a lot of management support now, it is email. There are numerous groups that are looking into how to redo email so that it can once again be useful and not just, you know, a cesspool of spam. And so with that, here's what I'm saying. First, too much data is a bad thing, and we need ways to reduce the amount of data at the network management level, to provide only the useful information and to provide it in a meaningful way. We still are missing the linkages, particularly for configuration management. Provisioning is hard, not impossible, but hard, because of the lack of standards. Security management and network management are tightly related. This got forgotten early on. It's now getting remembered. And I think you can expect that the applications that you use for one will, in fact, integrate with the other. And, in fact, they'll probably be the same in many cases. I think because of the amount of data flow, you're going to need to start to expect more from the end elements. And you're going to need to start to see much more complex authorization models. The good thing here is that Unix actually provides pretty much a nice guiding light in terms of isolation of functionality. Unix has done, you guys in USENIX have done, I think, 30 years or 25 years of great research and development in this area. We've been through quite a bit of the government with the Orange Book early on, with multiple level classifications that were done for Unix. I think all of that work is applicable in this area. And my last point is that we're washing keys and we need some help to deal with that at the consumer level. So with that, I guess that what that boils down to is help solve some of these problems. We need the help. And thanks. Questions? If people have questions, I'm happy to take them. There's two mics here and here.
Hi, Carl Stahl on HP Labs. You said the thing about the data, and we need to aggregate and so forth. So there are two trends I wanted to mention. One was the DTrace talk yesterday. Did you get a chance to see it?
Unfortunately not.
Okay, so the idea is that you can turn on these things where you can do aggregation. So you sort of download a little program and tell it, aggregate these, and this is what I want. And a related observation is, for example, graphics cards. They're now moving to the same idea. They used to have hard-coded, you can do the A, B, or C, and now you can download little programs and do what you want. So maybe in the routers, you can have something where the management software, network management software, like OpenView or pick your favorite flavor, can download programs to your routers to collect whatever it needs, because you probably won't be able to predict what sorts of things they'll want in 5 or 10 years.
I would love to be able to work with you to do that. I think our customers would benefit greatly. So stick around.
You just
stood up there, and I'm glad you did, because I'm coming right at you afterwards.
I'm sitting back there.
Any other questions? Thanks for your time. Enjoy the rest of the conference.